Hello and welcome again to another fantastic YouTube podcast series, again powered by openbusinesscouncil.org and citiesabc.com. And I'm excited to continue with this series, portraying and bringing global personalities, global thought leaders, global doers that are changing the world and especially creating new narratives for us. And as you know, I've been bringing people from all over the world. I'm bringing people that I deeply respect, but as well people that actually have, I would say, sometimes a magic wand to make things change and make things move forward. And especially at nowadays where there's so much fragmentation of the way we see business, technology, society, and the finance and all these different things. We need more than ever people that actually can be and looking at leadership, looking at global businesses, local businesses, and as well how we look in terms of social impact in different areas and how we put all of this together. So today I welcome to my series someone that I know for a while and I deeply respect. So I welcome Lionel Lee that is joining us from Singapore. And Lionel Lee is a very special guest because he has been bringing and putting together amazing different things from philanthropy to thought leadership, and as well building a global company and platform like Platinum Circle that is a leading business group involving corporations, and as well building and managing foundations and social impact initiatives, and at the moment as a committee chair at the Better Foundation. So I'm actually quite excited to discuss his profile, his background, and especially the way he's changing the world, changing how business works, our society, and actually how can make the world a better place. So welcome to our series, Lionel.
Thank you so much, Denise. Thanks for having me.
So, Lionel, you are a personality that has a lot of different areas and as well a very rich personality in terms of the things you do. So I would like to start by, I always do this on my two channel, but I want, in your case, I'm more excited because I want to understand, especially about your background, because of course being in Singapore, but being a citizen of the world and as well being working in so much countries, you have so much wealth of knowledge, cultural, national, international, but as well you've been dealing with a lot of nuances when it comes to people, cultures, and background. So I would like to hear that from you.
Sure. Thanks so much, Denise. I think I'm not just a personality, but we are all personalities as well, including yourself. I think you're just being very humble. And again, also, you know, thanks for having me and having this casual conversation. So work background-wise, I guess it's pretty simple. I come from a commercial background where I deal with real assets, financial assets, as well as private businesses. I haven't really had a lot of job hopping compared to some of the friends who have worked for a whole list of companies within their career. Mine is just two investment holding companies. I guess the interaction with various asset classes and also with businesses during my career with those two companies allowed me to get involved also with the nonprofit space. And I also guess I have to thank the World Economic Forum for opening my eyes to social and economic issues, partly through appointment by WEF to various committees and task force. So I think that's a quick summary of the work as well as the non-profit background.
And tell us a bit about your education and how is it going? Is it to, because I have a global audience, I'm based in London, you're based in Singapore. So for sure, someone that comes from Singapore for the world and you travel a lot, you do a lot of things in Asia, but as well all over the world. So tell us a bit about the education and how your education made the person you are. I always like to learn about the basis, whatever you want to share, of course.
Yeah, sure. Education-wise, I was educated in Singapore in terms of primary and secondary, or I guess in the case of some of our friends who are watching, junior and high school. And my university or my tertiary education was actually in the UK. So I specialized in marketing and completed an MBA in strategic marketing. I guess the humor in all of it is I actually don't use a lot of what I studied in school in the day-to-day work. So as Denise, you are aware, my work background is very much finance, investment centric. While there is some marketing in there, a lot of it is actually on the job training. So a lot of what I've done and doing today, both in the commercial, a non-governmental, non-profit space, a lot of it comes from on-the-job training. I refer back to the education pieces, from primary all the way through to tertiary. It's more of the interactions with fellow students, learning from each other, and also being in a multicultural environment, not so much in primary and secondary in Singapore, but definitely with tertiary education, it was a much more multicultural environment. And that provided, a basis for interacting with, and just learning and interacting with people from different cultures, which also means different mindsets, different points of view. And different ways of looking at the world.
Now, and so let me ask you on this part, and I want to go through different endeavors that you've been doing. So especially in your career, you've been doing quite a lot of things. Like you mentioned, finance, corporate, and now as well, non-for-profit. But you've been building quite big things. So tell us, I would like to touch different of the things, but just... So if I look at your career highlights and achievements, what would be the things that you would like to highlight? Because you have a lot.
Oh, okay. It's a tough question. I'm probably not going to talk a lot about achievements because it's difficult to define. So what I might define as achievement, someone else might not. But I think highlights will be interesting and useful for our viewers. So I'm very thankful. I enjoyed the rare opportunity of working in 16 different industries and sectors. Probably that's something that not many friends have done because of the nature of or perhaps their career as well. And also being able to work in 22 markets. So 16 different industries, sectors, and 22 markets. I think that's probably a highlight that I can share with everyone. At least it's a highlight in my life, and it might be interesting for viewers. The other highlight would be having the opportunity to improve the course of more than 40 businesses and nonprofits over the recent 20 years. So I think that would also be a highlight of my my career. And the other, I'm just trying to think, a third one that's a fun highlight, of being the only male, right, or only guy in two entirely female-staffed businesses. So I think that would be a highlight. It's like Ken in the Barbie doll world. Yeah, I'm the only Ken. The rest are all Barbies.
Wow, that's an impressive one. I love that.
I think that's my favorite highlight.
That's quite unique as well, because most of the business are much more men than women. So in the time of Barbie,
only one man, all women. Yeah. So that is the highlight. I'm sure our male viewers would be exceptionally excited about that particular job opportunity.
No, that's an impressive one. So, and I like the way as well. And I had actually a similar experience when I was in university. So I understand you. So fantastic. So in terms of your work in global business leadership and consulting, so you've been working, of course, predominantly in Asia, but as well around the world. So tell us about the cultural, the economic nuances that you've been working and you've been fighting on this. And I know that doing business, and I think special for people listening to us, this is an important question because I'm learning all the time. And for instance, sometimes the way even you use your tone of voice, the tone of jokes, In some cultures, it can actually create a big problem. In other cultures, you need to work it. You have to build relationships, and the relationships are created for business. COVID changed a lot of things. It enabled for us to do what we're doing right now, talking in different parts around the world. But there's still a lot of work to do, and these nuances are key. And their experience in global leadership is key. So tell us about this, because you've been working big events on this, and I want to understand what would be the things you highlight, especially Singapore World and some of the things that you got in your career.
Yeah, it's I mean, just like you said, you know, it's a challenge working and not just so much working, but if you are leading, you know, a multicultural organization, doesn't matter the size of it, you know, and the type and the industry and the market. I think it's one of the biggest challenges for managers yesterday and today and tomorrow. Maybe the way I can approach the conversation in this area is just looking at some of the lessons I kind of picked up along the way. So, you know, the first thing I realized as I started working in more a greater number of countries is that you know, everywhere and everyone is different. And you start to realize that there are subcultures, there are generational cultures, there are work cultures, and there are company cultures in every market that I've had a chance to work with. So I think that's the first, the start thing that jumps at someone who might be new to working in a variety of markets. And also the other thing that I learned very early in working with different markets and different cultures is it's important to have someone who can act as your cultural advisor. You know, so it's just essentially someone who's local. Doesn't need to be someone in your business. It's just could be a friend, but someone that can point out the nuances to you. And I think that helps a lot in terms of not making devastating, for lack of a better word, devastating mistakes. Right? Essentially, you just don't want to offend the other party because you're actually innocent of or you're ignorant of some of the cultural nuances. And also, I guess when you're actually working with those cultures, I realize also that in different markets, consensus approach works. Other times, you know, you have to be autocratic. It works in that particular culture. So what I've done is I learned to adapt, right? I learned to adapt. I learned to fit in, and then I mold the specific organization that I'm working with. I mold that organization's needs and results around that ball of culture. Then you also realize that some types of cultures can be universal. So I've realized also that performance cultures can sometimes be universal. High performing teams, you know, consisting of different cultures, can actually be similar from country to country. So that's something that is, I guess, the opposite of going to market going to different markets where cultures are different, and you realize that actually there are some cultural threats that you can sow through different markets. So what I've done over time is you know, I learn what works, what doesn't work, and then I find a approach that firstly is comfortable for me and also makes all the other cultures I'm working with comfortable. So I've found that when you try to marry the cultures around a shared objective and result, it actually works quite well for everyone, because we don't look at each other's cultures. If that becomes a barrier, we are all focused on a common outcome. So yeah, I guess those are the the few lessons and slash tips that I can share with regards to the cultural, multicultural, multinational culture topic that we're addressing at the moment.
Yeah, I love the way you put it, especially the way of seeking help and working with different people, because it's very difficult. And sometimes you cannot do a business if you don't understand the culture. You cannot really progress. Even sometimes small things can create big waves, and people have misconcept that, especially with Asia. And of course, there's always this European view of the world. But even in Europe, you have, for instance, if you deal with the Swedish, it's completely different from dealing with the Spanish or the Portuguese or French. So we have these nuances, but we have more than ever, this is key. It was always in history, but now more. So let's go right now to the work that you've been doing. So, You are right now leading the non-profit foundation, the Better Foundation, and you are as well doing a lot of things there. So tell us a bit, first of all, what is the Better Foundation, the non-profit foundation? And for people listening to us, we'll put the links wherever you listen to us, and you can have the bio of Lionel, all the different organizations he's doing. But tell us what it is, the Better Foundation, how it works, and the inspiration, and how we're building an audience and the solutions that it works.
Sure. I think that the Better Foundation, we're not like exceptionally unique or special type of foundation. We are very similar to many other private foundations and philanthropic organizations around the world. I think the main difference or a difference is that we have over time deliberated and recognized that we can't donate our way out of the world's problems. So problems like climate change, poverty, violence, you know, trafficking, displacement, social injustice, homelessness, discrimination, animal cruelty, and so on and so forth. So we've been trying to find a better way or better ways to make the world a better place. Notice the three betters in that short sentence, hence the name, the Better Foundation. So we're just working in the background, actually like most nonprofits and non-governmental organizations, and supporting their causes. So we decided that we will focus our efforts on a movement to address financial inclusion, one person at a time. It's a recent step that we've taken away from the traditional philanthropic organization approach to go grassroots and to adopt the public individual as a beneficiary, regardless of gender, age, religion, and nationality.
So these are very, very sensitive topics. So how do you deal with that from the perspective of, so the foundation is, and I would like to, because I've been working with a couple of foundations, including people from Gates and so forth. So each foundation, and actually one of the foundations I worked in the past, actually sponsored as well my master, so I'm very grateful. So each foundation has different focus. Okay, some of them are, like you said, in your case, you focus in like the Better Foundation, the name says everything. It's quite very, I would say, sensitive and very big global problems. So can you tell us a case study where you're solving some of the problems, and what are the things that you're doing when it comes to the Better Foundation?
Yeah, so we actually looked at, of course, the world's problems, and we know that we can't solve them in the traditional manner, as I mentioned before, with regards to just donating our way out of those problems. So we realized that the common denominator of the world's problems are actually people. And if we are able to approach each individual and we're able to help them move into a position where they've got greater financial stability, security, then they have the ability or have increased ability to become party to solving the world's problems. So if we want to make the world a better place, we've got to help people to become better. So that's a different approach that we've taken and addressing, the bigger global issues from a people's perspective.
That's amazing and really super important. So in terms of how does the any kind of foundation and global organization normally aligns with the United Nations, and I know that you've been actually collaborating as well with some the partners of the United Nations, like UNHCR, so United Nations Refugee Agency. So can you tell us how do you look at the goals of the Better Foundation and the goals and mission of the United Nations and some of the things that you do aligned on that?
Sure. So I guess one of the focal points that we talked about with the Better Foundation is we decided to focus on financial inclusion of people, right? So our basis is having more financially secure people means there are more people out there having the monetary means to make an impact on the world around them. And it auto aligns to the United Nations Sustainability Development Goals, especially 4 and 10. So the Better Foundation, SDG 4 and SDG 10 are basically about delivering inclusive and quality education for all, and also reducing inequalities. So the difference is at the foundation, we're focused on financial education and inclusion, and also ensuring that no one is left behind on the road to achieving financial security. And also, you know, where financial education is concerned, we see that as part of the basic human right. It also unifies, it strengthens communities. It empowers people by giving them the knowledge and skills to become financially secure, if not independent. And so again, that reinforces the stand that we have, which is everyone has a right to financial security and the pursuit of a better life. So when people are better off, they have greater means to make the world a better place.
Fantastic. So, I know that one of the things you work is the concept of FIRE, financial independence, retire early. And I know that the Better Foundation incorporates it to the content and the community. So tell us about this.
Yeah, so FIRE, there's lots of information out there in the public space about FIRE. There are also a couple of definitions around. So we interpret FIRE a little bit differently. So FIRE to us simply means building a nest egg of passive income so that individual, i.e. you and I, can choose to stop working in a day job. Hence, financial independence, right? The FI of FIRE. And if you can stop working in your day job before the statutory retirement age in your country, that is retire early, so RE, part of FIRE. The more common explanation and imagery of FIRE that people have shared with me, it's like a squirrel trying to store egg nuts for the winter. You know, the squirrel actively scrims and saves every nut so it can actually have a hoard of nuts when winter comes. But in the meantime, you have a very malnourished squirrel. So that's not really what we want for the members of our community. So our focus is working towards FIRE, or helping them to work towards FIRE in ways where they are able to work better, they are able to earn better, save better, and invest better, so that, you know, at the end of the day, they can retire better and live better. That's a lot of betters.
No, but it's the better that we need, because in the end of the day, there's actually much better ways to find solutions and things like that than we think. And the biggest challenge of sometimes the world economy can be solved by putting these concepts and taking it forward. So yes. How do you look?
Just give me one, the coaches to be practical, right? Rather than to be theoretical, we want them to be practical. So people can actually be able to learn and to apply.
Yeah, that's the very important thing, being applying these. And that's partly what I try to do in this series, is to interview people that actually apply principles, technology, solutions, and ideas. So the Better Foundation fosters a supportive community and where the individuals can share their experiences. So tell us a bit how we collaborate with other organizations and business and governments to maximize the impact and create sustainable change, because that's a key element for any foundation and any organization on this.
Yeah, so again, we're very honest with where we are in on that road or on that path. We've just embarked on our movement and efforts to build a like-minded community around the movement. Of course, you know, when we have conversations with organizations and people, we have to be very frank and say that, look, you know, please bear with us as we grow content and conversations around financial security, financial independence, and FIRE that are practical and that work for those individuals. And of course, we also welcome the support of anyone and everyone who's interested in their own financial journey and want a better life to join us. I think the most important ingredient that glues everything for us is that the movement is very grassroots rather than top-down. It's not bureaucratic. We are essentially a movement that is by members, for members, and for the benefit of members. And of course, as well as subscribers of our social media channels. So most of the practical wisdom on personal finance, including experiences and stories, are shared on our YouTube channel, I Want a Better Life. And we use other social media channels like Facebook group, LinkedIn, essentially as a chat room. So we use that to table questions and answers between members who've basically been there, done that, and those who are still trying to find their way. So it's about having a, I guess, easy to access platform where people can exchange, have a conversation, exchange insights. And I'm also helping to answer member questions and find practical solutions to their personal financial challenges as well.
Yeah, that's a fantastic initiative and a really critical one. So last thing about the Better Foundation. So from a financial and organizational, foundations are dependent of investment, communities, and so forth. How is your financial model, and how you bring this broader model to the social, and how you coordinate these two different parts? So I think it's important for people listening to us that probably don't know so much about the foundation management and strategies.
Sure. So we are essentially a private foundation, and we are internally funded through an endowment. So we are not open for donations, which is different from charity foundations, which receive donations. So we don't go out and actually ask for donations, and we don't actually want donations as well. So everything that we are doing right now to grow the community through financial inclusion, you know, content, conversations, they are essentially funded internally from our endowment. And in terms of our working relationship with individuals or organizations, likewise, all of our efforts are funded internally.
Well, that's so that means you have a very strong independent business model. Okay, so
yes, if you want to, I'm trying to think a simple comparison, right? Just to help viewers understand. So, if you think of a fund management company, right? So we are essentially a combination of a fund management company and a nonprofit, whereby we have our own fund, we manage our own fund in house. That fund generates a return, and we use that return to support our activities.
Fantastic. That's really an impressive model, and I think a critical one here. Okay, so I'll shift right now for other things that you achieve. So you've been working with a lot of big business events, investment, real estate, and wealth management during your career. So, and one of the initiatives, actually, I think was through this initiative that I met you, was the Platinum Circle, which is since 2003 has been a growing community for business leaders and policymakers interested in creating more economic and business growth together between all the leading business groups, with annual excess revenues exceeding $100 million, and intergovernmental organizations in Asia, Oceania, North America, Europe, Middle East, Africa, Central Asia, and Latin America. So tell us about Platinum Circle.
Okay, so Platinum Circle, we've been around for a while. We are not a very high profile organization. We are actually born out of a consensus by an originally small collective of leaders or decision makers from business, government, and intergovernmental organizations, all of whom share the same objective, which is to build closer business and economic ties. So we gather in closed door meetings, I guess over the years, the group just got bigger as more joined into our business and economic agenda on the global, regional, and national level.
So you've been doing a lot of events around the world. So can you tell us some of the events that you've been doing and some of the things that you did better?
Yeah, sure. So events, we just call them meetings, basically. So we've been running a lot of closed door meetings amongst our community. And the agendas or the topics of the meetings are always relevant to business and economy. And also it depends on, what makes sense to the communities. For example, we have a series that focuses on the future of the global economy and organizations, especially businesses that are on the grow, and also economies that are on the grow as well. And then we've got a very differing or different initiative that focused on global wealth and assets. And that again had its own agenda and its own topics that were related to ways and means for economies to build wealth, but also for organizations and also for individuals to do so. So that's where we introduce, earlier years when there was probably less conversation around the individual wealth space, we started to engage with our single family offices and family businesses.
Do you want to share just some of the highlights? Because I was in one of the events, and just for people that don't know about the initiative, I know that it's, of course, targeting very, like you said, very high-profile organizations and speakers, but there's a lot of discussion, a lot of great ideas, like you said, but some highlights of what you did in the past, what you are trying to do in the future, just a bit of a history as well.
Yeah, sure. So I think with the Global Assets and Wealth Initiative, it was an opportunity to actually get, the more traditional businesses, organizations, and their leaders to see what's happening in the world of wealth and assets. That's also when we had the opportunity to introduce the world of digital assets to our community, who were largely more of a legacy and traditional players within the finance space. So that was something that was interesting. We also took the opportunity to showcase companies that actually came. We gathered in Singapore. I was just trying to recall. We've got about 30 different nationalities, as in different companies from 30 different markets gathered in Singapore to showcase, you know, the best of what they were doing in the traditional as well as the digital wealth space to our community. So I think that was probably one of the biggest highlight of that initiative and the meetings that took place.
Fantastic. And it's, I know that is a very high-profile initiative and very good on that level. So in terms of coming back to the United Nations, so you're a partner of UNHCR. So tell us a bit about how what you've been doing as a partner and some initiatives of the agency, because they're a very impactful agency and more important than ever because everything happening around the world on that level.
Yeah, sure. I think UNHCR is probably not one of the well-known, perhaps, or I would say higher profile UN agencies. I think because their focus is very much on refugees and displaced people, not a very tasteful topic that a lot of individuals and organizations like to talk about. It's not the sexy stuff. But of course, for the people who are in the know, you know, UNHCR needs no introduction. It is doing the best job it can as the world's loudspeaker on refugees and displaced people, as well as, you know, being the protector of their rights. So I guess, you know, as in the case of the Russia-Ukraine war, so that's something that everyone is aware of because it's still happening till today. 8.3 million Ukrainians have been displaced. That's what I was informed by my folks at UNHCR. And that works out to about 20% of the country's population. So that is a big number. And you can just imagine 8.3 million Ukrainians being displaced, meaning that they are forced out of their country. And where do they go? They have to go to their neighbors as the first port of call, and then probably, you know, some of them make it a bit further afield. And that creates a significant, I would say, string or chain of problems, not just for neighbors, but for the world. So for me, I'm proud to be associated with UNHCR, and I also continue to be one of its loudspeakers in raising awareness of issues as well as the actions that we all need to take to help our fellow human beings that are in that predicament. Because you never know, you know, one day it might be you.
Yeah, everyone. I have actually a business partner that is from Turkey. And his entire family lost everything during the earthquake in south of Turkey. So,
yes,
like you said, for people listening to us, this is actually quite serious. And for us, his family is a family with business for decades or centuries. And and this is something that really I appreciate the work you're doing on this. And this is everyone for them. And sometimes I think, especially in Europe, there's this thing about the refugees coming to UK, to France. And there's a lot of special media. I think even government leaders using the most horrible ways of dealing with this. So one question I have for this is, from your experience on this, a lot of the problems with refugees, one thing is what national wars or natural cataclysm, like an earthquake or stuff like that. But a lot of things as well is based on poverty and as well lack of sometimes basic things. How do you suggest to improve that? Because that's the thing that... then I think in the end of the day, like you said, how can we change these things with practicalities? Because in the end of the day, I have my experience in Africa, and sometimes just education, creating new solutions can make a big difference. But most of the people are not understanding. And then it gets into this cynical approach towards that everything is people don't want to work or people don't want to do this. There's a lot of cynicism, especially on the media, and extremes in one right or the left. I would like to see, from being on the earth, doing these things, what would be the things that you advise people listening to us, and how can we all be part of the solution instead of the problem?
Yeah, it's a challenging problem. The easiest word I would use is it's messy, right? It's messy, and most people don't want to touch it, or don't want to even have to talk about it, hear about it, deal with it, right? Because it's complex. So if we try to simplify the mass, right? Bisect, trisect, bisect, whatever. You'll realize that most of the displacement and refugee situations arise from two things. It's either war, or it's, again, like referring to what you mentioned earlier, Denise, with your Turkey friends, it's essentially natural calamity. So most of UNHCR's call for help, as in them being called in to help, and also their call out for help, it's usually related to these two things. So these are the two situations that create voluminous displacement. And in some countries, these situations are long-standing. So, I mean, if you look at the situation with the Syrian refugees, it doesn't go away because it is not something that's overnight. The Russian-Ukraine war compared to the Syrian situation, you know, that's like a baby, right, from a tenure perspective. So that's just giving some context, right? So, and then when you start to think about solutions, it's difficult because there are so many layers that a UN agency, doesn't matter whether it's UNHCR or UNICEF or UN Women, so on and so forth, have to deal with. So I think for us as individuals or as leaders of organizations or nonprofits, it's looking at bits or parts of a problem, of the problem, and seeing what we can do about it. So with a better foundation, we actually did look at, you know, and learn from these, I guess, areas of social economic concerns on a global basis. And that's why we chose education. But we didn't choose education from the traditional, let's provide primary, secondary, tertiary education approach. We attacked it, or we are attacking it, from the financial inclusion perspective. So we just go back to the basic, you know, of everything is, if, let's say we take Africa, you know, it doesn't matter if we take Syria, it doesn't matter even if we take a poor neighborhood in the US, or even if we take, you know, a middle-class neighborhood in Australia, or everyone has to deal with personal finance, right? They all need to deal with that particular aspect. And if we can help them to become more financially secure, then there is a higher chance they will be in a better position financially, and therefore be able to reciprocate that, I guess, that financial good or that financial benefit that they've received to someone else that needs it more. So, you know, like even if you ask for donations, for example, it's challenging to ask for donations and how often can someone donate. But someone who's more well off, if we help that individual become more well off and we instill the beliefs, values, and attitudes of giving back, then it's that we've got a higher chance of that individual actually donating, even just from the simple point of donation, right? And so that's how we are looking to, I mean, that's how we're trying to tackle the big issue. If you're taking refugee and displacement as that big, as one of that big issue from a financial inclusion perspective. So in UNHCR right now, they already do some of that in their own way. So education is a big thing. There are education programs running for primary, secondary, or high school and tertiary, specifically for refugees and displaced people.
So this is a very important thing for all of us, and I think we all should be part of the solution here. I appreciate and respect a lot, and kudos to your work on this, because this is a key element for all of us, okay? And I think we should be much more conscious about this, because in the end of the day, it's not so difficult to change the problems of the world if we all think alike. So I appreciate this. And yeah, go on.
And also to interrupt, I mean, sorry to interrupt, I would also like to, just as you are giving kudos, I mean, the kudos goes to the people that are on the ground in all of those different countries, places, who are actually taking time out to do what, I guess, we just use a generic word, good, right? But they are the ones that deserve the kudos. They are the ones on the ground helping a fellow human being.
As a business personality that has been working in the crossover between thought leadership, finance and real estate. We have right now a lot of changes that are coming, especially from emerging technologies, and especially AI, and even on finance, this is more important than ever. And even I know that the United Nations has been trying to use blockchain for supporting a lot of things right now. So my main thing right now is, okay, from this perspective, what's your views on this? Okay, so how do you think we can actually enable better solutions on this thing so we can actually create more aligned strategies how to deal with technology, especially with your experience working on business and very high profile companies, but as well in the areas of finance, technology, and so forth, because it's an important thing that we need all to be aligned.
Yeah, well, I guess firstly, I should proclaim that Denise is actually much more of an expert in the digital and tech space than I am. So I only provide my humble opinion, which is I think as a recipient user, consumer, whether I'm wearing the business leader or the nonprofit leader hat, right? It's forcing all of us basically to rethink how we do business. If you're a business leader, how we are approaching nonprofit agendas, and also how we conduct finance globally, regionally as well as locally. So one area which is something that everyone, every viewer will be familiar with is just the simple area of data, right? Or data. And if you talk about AI, it's the AI's ability to process, to analyze huge amounts of that in a very short period of time. So that's like amazing, right? But what's more amazing that again, of course, creates improvements, but also changes, is that it allows us to derive meaningful insights, right? And that allows us perhaps more informed, hopefully more intelligent decision making. In the financial world, though, that maybe if I look at it from a less rosy perspective, I think the emerging technologies, whether it's AI, machine learning, and everything else, added together, it's creating challenges for financial institutions. So your legacy financial institutions definitely, it's eroding their competitive advantage. We see that with the birth and also the proliferation and also success of fintech and neobanks. I guess as a consumer, it's also enabled the proliferation of financial fraud, right? So you're getting more scams as well. Now it's actually AI, powered. The other thing I can think of is, from a user perspective, AI, machine learning, they are the foundation of emerging technology in general. So, as a collective, they will impact some things that maybe our viewers are familiar with, like Internet of Things. That's probably a particular area of tech that is more common these days. Virtual reality, facial recognition, robotics, automation, just as some examples. So I think the developments in these areas will definitely impact the way in which we behave socially. Already you see that with the people around you, whether it's in the social space or it's in the workplace, and it definitely will impact business in terms of the way we do business, the way we invest, and also the way in which we manage wealth.
Fantastic. And my point here, of course, is that I know that, of course, I'm discussing and defining a lot of strategies around this and building this technology. But what I'm interested in is how people that don't have an understanding of these technologies can cope with this technology. Because the challenge with this technology is that can create monsters or can create fantastic things. And effectively, the world, even if you look at history, there's close to 8 billion people in the planet. But I'll say historically and even in terms of macro numbers, we live better than ever in history. Of course, there's still a lot of issues, like you just mentioned, but I say all the, a lot of opportunities. So as a last one, and I know that we passed the time, so from your experience as a business personality and thought leader, and especially someone that is working with very big organizations, how do we envision the future of organizations and leadership? And what would be the, especially in leadership, which I think is the key element, because leadership is very sensitive. Everyone has to be part of leading. And the challenge is that most of people don't want to lead or are passive. So what it would be the things that you learn and that you want to share with your audience, because you've been on the leadership side, finance, real estate, which are the biggest industries in the world, but as well in charities and as well in not-for-profits, where we're doing fantastic work, trying to change the world. So what would be the areas that you think some of the strategies, some of the things that can make society better? Practical stuff, like you said, very practical stuff we can take for people listening to us, all of us.
Yeah, so it's a very big question to close the conversation, and so many layers of answers. And answers are all very different, you know. So when I think about from a business / finance perspective, I think, you know, the practical approach for any business leader would be largely around stability or growth, you know. And I think that that's what most of the businesses should strive for. And of course, some of them are restructuring, they might be reorganizing, but also for stability and growth. And I think that's one of the focuses that business leaders want to pay attention to, because everything else that's happening around us will disrupt stability and growth. And also, as you've pointed out, in a previous comment, Denise, it can also enable stability or growth. And the reason why I wanted to say stability or growth is because when you take if you take that basis, right, and you extend it to the other facets, so if you take it and extend it into a non-profit, non-governmental environment, then it's also about creating stability and growth. Not for the organization, but more for its constituents or its beneficiaries. And I think that, again, that's also important because at the end of the day, you want ideally a stable world, and you also want an environment that where people are able to continue to grow, right? And with regards to technology, you know, technology can either divide us in some ways or it can include us. So it's important with technology being the wrap around, you know, business stability and growth, the stability and growth of economies, of communities, of countries, that the inclusion or technological inclusion is part and parcel of that equation. So people who are not familiar with with technology and advancements in technology have a chance to actually catch up because they are included as well. Just as much as we are trying to help or to make people financially included.
Yeah, that's the key element, how we can actually include people in the financial, technology, and digital, because at the moment the three things work together. And as well, the challenge right now, and I want to, if you have at least 1 minute more, I would like to hear from you on that, because it's actually for me the biggest question, okay? So one of the challenges I face is that I think all of us that are facing a lot of disruption, because the challenge is the concept of work for life, the concept of even what means a job and what means to have an education. It's going to be completely disrupted in the next 5 to 10 years. It's already being, and most of the universities are not preparing students for that. Most of the universities have no digital education, no much less AI education. At the end of the day, this is already mainstream. The financial industry depends on AI for all the transactions. I think 90% of the transactions in the financial industry are done by machines and algorithms. And if you go to wealth, it's as well from crypto to blockchain to anything. It's all about technology. But most of the people don't even understand it. So I just want to touch this area purely from your experience working with wealth individuals, with wealth organizations, and as well non-for-profits and in the United Nations. What is the area that you do? I understood from your foundation, you're more focused on social good, but do you do as well this? And holistically, how can we tackle this? Because that's the biggest elephant in the room for our civilization. I'm not even talking about the future that comes out of this, but purely the disruption that is coming from this. Because effectively, there's a lot of wealth being created, but as well, a lot of disruption being created. And the perception is becoming completely blurred.
Yeah, again, it's also a very big question to answer. It's not an easy one. I would say if we had to simplify, if we had to start with a simple explanation, right? Not simplify the answer, but to start with a simple explanation, we can probably use two words, right? Financial literacy and technological literacy. And then we need to start from there. So I think the challenge we have, if you look at financial literacy, is that we have actually a significant amount of financial literacy across the world. When I say that, you know, and we talk about it, viewers, in their minds, the first picture that comes to their mind, they might be thinking third world countries, you know, developing nations. Unfortunately, this cuts across the world. It includes our mature economies as well. So if you take, you know, like the US, for example, US actually has a very high financial literacy, financial illiteracy rate across generations, reported in so many surveys and research studies done by both government as well as non-governmental organizations in that market. But I just use US as an example, right? It's across the board in the UK, in Europe, in Australia, even in Singapore. And we're talking about the younger generation, even the Zoomers or the Gen Zers, millennials, they actually fall into that financial illiteracy trap. And coming to technological literacy, that's probably the generation that is far more literate technologically / digitally as compared to Gen X and the boomers, right? So it's a bit of the reverse situation there. And that's where we have to address technological illiteracy with the Gen X and the boomer generation. And it's about, having activities, programs, you know, even at a grassroots level that allows these people to have access to just explanations, descriptions, you know, that allow them to become literate, right? So they get a sense of the basics and then they can move from there. Then the challenge with the information is we are in an age whereby there are so many conduits, so many channels of information. A lot of that information can also be biased, inaccurate. So because they are receiving information from a variety of sources, some of those sources may not be reliable, but because that's how they consume, right? So if you take example of the Zoomer or the Gen Z generation and how they are currently learning financial concepts, they learn from TikTok, they learn from YouTube, right? So you've got people who actually don't know what they're talking about. They're probably, some of them are frauds and scammers, giving them financial advice / education, right? And that's something that doesn't help the individual to become really financial literate, and they end up actually taking that advice, making the wrong decisions, and they then drop out of, I guess, the financial security journey, right? Because they've taken a step back. And likewise, even with the technological literacy, a lot of what we learn about new tech comes through new tech, right? So what are the so-called, I won't say new tech, but what are the tech platforms that we are receiving information from? And again, there are a fair amount of inaccuracies and unreliable information. So people are not really getting the correct picture for them to actually have a solid understanding. And then from there itself, they end up making all the wrong decisions, right? Especially when you also have the middle ground where finance and technology comes together. And that's where we're talking about things like making lots of quick money through digital assets, which may or may not be assets, but let's say maybe just cryptocurrency, right? So there's a lot of punters in that space because they got the financial literacy and the technological literacy from the sources, which then tells them, you know, you can make money. And yes, I'm not saying that they don't. Yes, they do, but it's a roller coaster ride. So they might make today, they might lose tomorrow, they might make again the next day and then lose again, the day after. That does not create financial security for those individuals on a long-term basis. So if they were trying to become, financially secure and independent over time, it's just going to take them, it might actually cause them to take several steps back. So I think that's another hole between financial literacy and technological literacy that we need to plug, right? So it's financial illiteracy, technological literacy, and then the in-between.
I think a fantastic summary, and I appreciate it. See, you answered actually very well, and actually very good point. And these are actually probably the biggest topics of our times. Well, I want to thank you. I passed a bit the time, so appreciate your time and insights. And actually, really congratulations for all the work being done. A lot of things for people listening to us. Think about this: technological literacy, financial literacy. I think these are concepts that all of us. Well, first of all, we have to be part of this, but in general for society. But I really appreciate a lot of insights and your excellent work. So Lionel, continue doing it. Whatever I can, I'm here to promote it and as well to keep pushing it. And I think the society should be very grateful for all this energy and passion that you put on this and work. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Denise. Yeah, thanks for the opportunity and invite to actually be part of the conversation. So, you know, I think the most important thing is that the viewers that are watching, you know, they benefit there are some information that we've exchanged or lessons that we've exchanged or tips that they can also then be able to use for themselves and then also be able to think about how they can also participate in the greater society around them, for either a greater good or, you know, join in the conversation and the efforts to make the world a better place.
Amen. And I think we all need to do it. Thank you so much and all the best over there.